Blog Talk Radio.
Fight the powers. We got to fight the powers. We got to fight the powers. We got a tremendous amount of things happening in our country in the 21st century that's going to require that we cut, we stand up, and we fight the powers. We can't continue going on with the same old, same old. We can't continue allowing the same system, the very initial system that was introduced that intentionally left out of demographics of people based on the color of their skin. We got to fight the powers. Sometimes you got to use terminology. You got to put music together. You got to say some things to fight the powers. This is a special show. We're looking to do something very unique. We're looking to record. This is not a call-in show, but a listen show, because we're here producing a program that's going to help us fight the powers. And we believe it's time that we learn how to fight the powers by putting together new strategies, new understanding, new mentalities, and bringing people together Welcome. This is me, Sean T. Daniels, coming at you from Louisville, Kentucky. This is the Focus Show, where we say following one course until successful. Following one course until successful. Many of my close friends of mine and people wondering why I was so adamant about saying that I'm a descendant of American slaves. And initially, when I first started this, I didn't have a whole lot of people that was on board with me. I read this book, America's Little Black Book, and it said that the parent culture that formed and created this country done some unbelievable, horrible things to a demographic of people solely because of the color of their skin. But we weren't Negroes, we weren't black, and we weren't African-Americans, but we actually are descendants of American slaves. And then I come along and I meet a gentleman and tells me about a system that needs to be changed, a system that needs to be reevaluated, a system that can be considered justice for all people. And then, you know, it comes to me that maybe this awakening is a new demographic of people getting involved called the descendants of Americans. So maybe we are the answer. Maybe we could do something. Maybe we could do something great to make some changes happen in our society. I am excited about the potential of what the future is looking like. And I believe that the future is looking brighter and brighter. And I'm excited about the fact that we have new people that's coming involved with us, and excited about what the concept of DOCSI is all about, and excited about the potential of us doing some unbelievable things. And before I bring on our special guest, I want to get Queen. How you doing, Queen? Welcome to the Focus Show.
Good evening, and thank you. Honored to be here once again.
Yes, Queen. I just want to thank you, Leonard and Gene. All your lines are open before I bring on our special guest and everything. Because Gene, I'm going to turn the show over to you, and you're going to actually, you know, host this show and do what you need to do. Because you got the questions and everything going to set it all up. So you're going to take the show over, Gene. Are you there? You ready, Gene?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Leonard, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, sir. I just wanted to tell you all that, and everybody listening, that thank you for the meeting that we had prior to this show. I think out of everybody that's on this line, I'm the oldest one. I'm the longest one been on this thing, fighting for this, thinking about this idea, descendants of American slaves. And it just made my heart warm up, just wept up, just to hear the passion of people feeling that we got something here and we really can do some good and we want to do it right and make it right. I just want to thank you all, and I want you all to take a moment to just tell the listeners that's going to be listening to this broadcast after we introduce our special guest with Dr. Norman Curlin is going to articulate, is going to intelligently explain why the descendants of American slaves are the new change, could be the change and making America greater than it's ever been by creating a new system. Before he brings it, I want you all, about just each one of you, take a moment and explain why you think, and Queen, starting with you first, okay, why you think the timing is right and the time is now, that change is looking more hopeful than it ever looked before.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, as far as the timing, I can say honestly, I believe that the timing is past due. What I can appreciate and what I love about DOCSI is that it is a proactive movement, and that it has the audacity to step out of the box from doing traditional things that historically has not worked for us, but now stepping into things that may not be traditional, but they are factual. And so I think that we have to change our culture. And changing a culture is far harder than anything that we can imagine. And I think that people have taken advantage of our culture. People know ahead of time what we're going to do in the political process. People know ahead of time what we're going to do in the financial markets. And so I think Dossie is the entity that is going to turn all of that around and that is going to change the culture of how descendants of American slaves actually operate in this country. And then we get to see a new descendant of American slaves emerge, all from the grassroots efforts of Dossie.
Hey, I appreciate that. I want to thank you for coming on board. We really appreciate you, Queen. You have been you are the mother, you are the woman, and you are definitely the sister that we've been looking for. I want to thank you for coming on board. I want to go ahead and get Leonard, the president of Dossie, to bring his comments and his views of why he thinks the timing is now, and also maybe say a few things about Dr. Curlin, as you had got to talk to him, as he's going to be our special guest, and then Gene is actually going to, you know, speak on it and introduce him into the program and the thing. But Leonard, go ahead. Tell us why you think the timing is now and what you think about Dr. Curlin.
As we've been talking here in the past couple of weeks, next year will mark truly 400 years of the presence of the descendants of Africans who were enslaved and brought to America, all right, and those descendants who actually were the forefathers of the descendants of American slaves and the American slaves. Next year will mark 400 years, all right, of our presence as slaves in America. The time is now. 400 years has passed, and we've got to go ahead and get something going. We've made very slow progress. We've made some strides, but that's not the metric that I measure our progress on. Our progress has to be measured on, you know, how well are we doing as a community as it relates to taking care of ourselves. When we looked at Hurricane Katrina, is a good example. Hurricane Katrina happened, and all of our accoutrements or our conveniences within society were taken away, and we could not survive. You had people, you know, left loved ones back behind because these people were on medication. So, as a dependent people, we have to be able to stand on our own, and it is time to step forward. And this is what Dossie is trying to do, is get us to step forward and stand up as a people and take our place in America as we always have been. So with that said, Dr. Curlin, I've had many, many, many conversations with Dr. Curlin. Dr. Curlin is a dynamic individual. He has a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of experiences with a whole lot of different things as far as American life has gone. I won't go too far into it because, like I said, I'm pretty sure Gene is going to do some more introduction. But from my personal standpoint, I've had many conversations with Dr. Curlin. Dr. Curlin is an asset to our organization. And moving forward, I think that union that we can have between his organization and ours, as far as the strategy and the plan that can be implemented through Dossie that can actually take effect in all of America, is a crucial and pivotal point for people in America. And I'm talking, when I talk about people, I'm talking about the 99% of people who are not the elite 1%. So that's just a little hint of what's going on. But, like I said, me and Dr. Curlin, when I told him, you know, that we just recently talked, and he talked about how we want to move forward with his ideas, he told me that's the best news I heard this year. So, like I said, that brought a smile to my face, and I'm pretty sure it brought a smile to his. So I'm going to turn it over now back to you, Meeshawn, and we'll proceed with the show.
All right. And this gentleman here, Gene Gordon, I just want to say thank you for coming on board. Thank you again, Leonard, for your involvement and your leadership. And Gene Gordon, my brother, but you just don't know. This all done sparked from that day, that last time we had conversation. I called you at your home, and I spoke to you, and I think you saw what I said. Man, you need to read this information about the Center of Economic Social Justice, because after talking to you, Gene, I realized, and after listening to you speak and hearing the wealth of knowledge of who you were, I knew I had been searching, been looking, never given up on the process of the Center of Economic Social Justice, what Dr. Curlin told us, but I knew that I could not put that ahead of DOSSI, because I felt that DOSSI, the identity piece, the following one course until successful, we needed to focus on making sure that we make the name be known and become serious. But most important, we need to find the right person that can articulate and communicate this information. And man, Mr. Gene Gordon, you are that individual. And I want to thank you for coming on board, and I want to thank Queen for introducing us. So for this moment on, I'm just going to be interjecting to keep Dr. Curlin on point here, because he can get to going. But you get to introduce Dr. Curlin, and going to be in your hands, Gene, of where we go from here. Welcome to the Focus Show, Gene. Thank you, brother.
It's a great honor to be here. And, I want to just take the time to thank God for putting myself and the leadership of DOSSI together. I want to just briefly talk about Dr. Norman Curlin and conversation with him and talking with him. From the moment we began talking, I just knew that this was it. I mean, you know, his knowledge, his wisdom. And Dr. Curlin carries a pretty healthy resume. He served during the Reagan administration back, I think, in 1985. He was a team member of the task force that came together with some ideas that was inspired by him, by Louis Kelso. And he's president of Center for Economic and Social Justice. He's also walked with Dr. King and during the civil rights movement. He played a very, very key part in that. And Norman Curlin also did a lot of work. I don't want to use the word social a lot, but he did a lot of work down in the South in Mississippi with the welfare program. And he carries a healthy resume. And he's been out there on the front line in the struggle from day one. I think, he served within he was part of the task force within the Reagan administration. And even the Ronald Reagan himself took a look at these ideas and came to the conclusion that this is something that needed to be done and to save Central America, if I'm not mistaken, on some of the economic problems that they were having during that time. So I want to welcome to the Focus Show Norman Curlin. Are you there?
Yes, I am, and I must say that was one of the finest introductions that I've ever had, and I'm very excited to be with all of you. I was impressed by what Queen said, and what Leonard said, and you and Meeshawn, because I think that you, that is DOSSI, can be the group that not only changes America, but will make America great again. It hasn't been, but it also, I can't think of any other group can address racism in the United States, which, but also racism throughout the world. And so I'm honored to be with all of you, And I have to say that these ideas are ideas that I learned. And I want to pass on to Dasi, because I think Dasi has to be the leader for many reasons. Because I think American slavery treated the slaves as not full persons. They only honored three-fifths of a person. In other words, they started out with the sin of America, despite all the great things that it had the potential of doing for freedom for everyone in the world. I think slavery was, as I said, the original sin, and it has to be rectified. And even the language of descendants of American slaves is perfect as the liberators of the wage slaves of America and the world, the welfare slaves, the charity slaves, the consumer debt slaves, so that we can bring about true justice to every child, woman, and man in the world. Dasi is the key group for advancing, for unifying people, and waking up America. So I'm proud to be with you.
So I want to just Gene. Gene got five or six questions, I think, anyone had. And Dr. Curlin, you know, our time, we have an hour, and we want to get all five or six questions in it. So I would ask that you please answer these questions in the shortest manner that you can, so we can get through all five of them on this time. Gene, back to you.
Yes, sir. And it's an honor and privilege to have you here with us today. But I want to, you know, get straight to the point. You know, I was always taught the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So I'm going to get right to it because we're limited for time. But I want you to explain to the listening audience, you know, to understand, you know, the money. When you speak about money, we think about the fiat currency, what I call it, and what it is, fiat currency that we carry around in our pockets. But I want you to explain to the listening audience and understand the money and credit creation process, and to get a more clear understanding of what money is.
Right. Well, first of all, I want to say that what I'm going to use as a definition is that of the person who taught me about expanded capital ownership, or what I call not a third way, but a just third way. And money is a social good. It's something that civilization advanced. It's a way of measuring. Barter, for example, before you had currency, people exchanged things. And they had to have a way of measuring the value of the things, because otherwise it wouldn't be a fair or just exchange. Let me just read from Kelso's definition, Louis Kelso. As I said, he's my most important mentor, but there are three others that are very critical. But Kelso said, money is not a part of the visible sector of the economy. People do not consume money. It's not a physical factor of production, but it is a yardstick for measuring economic input, economic outtake, and the relative value of the things that are going to be exchanged, whether they're goods or services. It provides a way of measuring. It's supposed to, but today's money is not backed by real things. It's not backed by assets. There should always be backing. But in today's money, it's created through the Federal Reserve System, but behind it are not assets of any kind. but rather government debt. So the more that the country goes into deficits, the more backing there is for the money. And the interesting thing is America once had a gold standard, and then Nixon abandoned the gold standard, and now and all the countries of the world are following the U.S. in terms of money. Now, the reason that money is important is because if a few control it, it will mean that power over money is controlled by a few. So therefore, it will become corrupt. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so the money system today is one that will only benefit a tiny fraction. 1%, for example, of the American people own more than the bottom 90% combined. In other words, the bottom 90% work for them as their wage slaves or salary slaves. And then those who can't work. But what Kelso pointed out, and this is very basic for us, every child, every woman, every man in America, as well as throughout the world, should have an equal opportunity to become an owner. Why? Because you're either going to own or you're going to be owned. And, of course, slavery in America, someone else owned your body. Someone else got the fruits of whatever you produced. We have to move away from treating people as things and recognize that if the right money system, a just money system, will enable people to own the robots, the artificial intelligence, and all the things that are displacing many forms of labor. So in any event, we have to see a new world in which people are able to work and love whatever work they're in, but become the owners and begin to receive the profits. And this all can be done without depending on the savings of the past, without depending on the wealth of the rich. We don't have to take away their property. No, property gives you rights. It gives you power. It gives you the right to the fruits of what you own. It gives you control. You don't want to control other people, but you want to control things. And so money and credit, the right kind of credit, and we're not using that yet, although Kelso invented a way to get workers in the private sector. We were able to get the laws through the Congress so that ESOPs, employee stock ownership plans, have enabled over 10 million American workers to become owners. Many have bought out their companies from the original owner. This can be done now for every person, not just the private sector workers. It's got to be done for everybody. It's got to be done for the government workers. It's got to be done for the people who can't work, who are the disabled. So in any event, the answer is money is the key, and I think the Kelso's definition is correct.
Yes, sir. Thanks for that response. Well done, Dr. Carolyn. My second question is, in today's news, we hear so much about political reform, which people have become more dependent upon the political system and the government. It's out of problems that's happening not only in America, but throughout the world. As you said earlier, that other countries have adopted America's way, and it's proven. We see it every day, you know, in international news, that it's not working. Would you explain to us why you feel that the solution to the problems that we as Americans and other countries throughout the world is facing today? Why do you feel that the political reform or, you know, cleaning up the political system is not the answer.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, because it is right in politics that the way you get share power is supposed to be through the vote. But the problem is, if the voter doesn't have power, economic power, then they become dependent on the rich or on the politician. You want the politicians and the rich to get out of the way, and they can't stop this. And the reason that I say that is because just as the civil rights movement was able to mobilize the people power, enough people power, so that segregation, which no one believed could be changed back in the early the 40s, the 50s, and early 60s, until people organized in a peaceful way, if in fact you were able, I think roughly 500,000 people came in for the March on Washington in 63. But because of the work of people like Medgar Evers and SNCC and people in NAACP and other organizations, in a peaceful way, they were able to get 500,000 people into Washington. Dr. King made it very clear, you don't use violence. SNCC did not use, they were student nonviolent coordinating committee. Now, many of them didn't have the economic solution, but Dr. King understood that you needed, and he gave speeches on this, that you needed what he called a new synthesis beyond capitalism and beyond socialism and other forms of collectivism. You got to get power to the people, economic power, then the political system will work. And I think that's what DASI can do. I think they should be aiming at getting a million people, twice that of the 60s, but not just DASI people, but bringing in people from throughout the country to come in and demonstrate at the Federal Reserve, because that institution, which is not a government institution, it was brought into being by the law, is the source of the problem, the economic problems of America and the world. It's the most powerful central bank in the world. Now the people have to not only demonstrate, but each of the 12 regions of the Federal Reserve, you have 12 regions. And I know, Gene, that you're in St. Louis. We've talked to we gave a talk in St. Louis back in the 2008, and is open.
Let me stop you right there. We have to get the people
to own the regional Fed, or at least control who is doing it, because right now it's the Wall Street people who are controlling the Federal Reserve. The New York Fed is the one that's pretty much controlling policy.
That was part of my last question. So we're going to leave it at that right there, and we'll come back to that later on. That was my last question. But you talked about my third question to you. You talked about ownership and why ownership be at the center, at the forefront, and in particularly DASI being a catalyst to taking, you know, and educating the people on ownership and leading the way and becoming, you know, that example for not just, you know, as you just stated, not just for DASI and the descendant of American slaves, but for people throughout the country and the world. And we're committed to doing that. But I wanted my fourth question. So you touched bases on the ownership part of it, so I can skip that. My fourth question to you is the Homestead Act. And the Homestead Act, if some of you listeners never knew about or understand. Lincoln passed the Homestead Act, where 160 acres were given away for
free.
Those to move out of it. Given away free and to move west and the Midwest, and they were given away free. And that was the Homestead Act. And Dr. Carolyn has come up with something under the leadership of Kelso, the Capital Homestead Act. How can that be relevant and beneficial to not just Dotsie, but to the, you know, the other countries? And can we implement this not just on a local scale, but on a national and global level, and under a comprehensive, long-range national Capital Homestead Act strategy? Why is such reform such a form necessary from the standpoint of economic growth and expanding capital ownership?
Okay. Now, I left out the fact that that it's conventional thinking that says that the only way you can own is to save. Well, most people live from hand to mouth. But what Kelso said is that's not true, that's the only way you can become an owner is through past savings. You're not dependent on the rich, the wealth of the rich. No. He talks about credit, which is what banks do. They look over your plan, and if it's what's called a feasible project, they will make a loan because that's what they're in the business of doing, is making loans, but it's backed by future, by new assets and future savings, not past savings, so that if, in fact, you can get to the full pre-tax stream of profits, in a few years, you could pay off those loans, but every year you would add, say, $7,000 for every man, woman, and child. This is slow growth. It couldn't be a lot faster, but I'm giving you slow growth, around $7,000. So a child born today would be able through their would be able to get $7,000. Of course, their family would determine what they buy of newly issued shares. That would pay for that would in which they'd be full voting, full dividend bearing, and there'd be no tax to the corporations that pay out their profits in this way. If they pay out dividends and all their profits go out, and you tax at the individual level after you pay for the shares, and the rich pay for it right now because they would have more taxable income, and we'll talk about the tax side of it. But the important thing is that you would be able to, through local banks, a child born today, just to give you some numbers in our projections, where with the changes that by the time the child reached age 65, they have a little less after tax, they'd have a little less than $500,000 accumulated. Starts slow, but it builds up over time. Just at $7,000, they'd have close to less than $50,000, but which is more than Social Security can provide. They would that child from the time they were born, and nothing begins to build up, they'd have $1.6 million after taxes during those years, before reaching 65. This is slow growth, but this is what we give you as and these numbers are all you can get from our website at www.cesj.org. You can get all that in that library. And that library is now available. I want DASI to be the principal group that studies that and then encourages all members of DASI to become aware of the way in which you can empower people through ownership without taking anything from the rich because they can't take it with them. So we also changed the inheritance laws so that you tax the recipient. And if they get over, say, $1 million, then you tax them over what they get for over a million. So they're encouraged to spread out their existing ownership over time because, again, they haven't figured out, the creator hasn't given them a way in which they can take their property with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well put. And I do encourage your listening audience to go onto their website, CEHSJ.org, and there's so much information on that website and that you can learn from it, and systems and things that you can apply to your own life to make life better for you. And Dr. Curlin mentioned about, you know, how, you know, you can save on taxes and accumulation of wealth from, you know, for a baby born today. And that will kind of like combat this dilemma we're having with the Social Security. What's going on with Social Security? I mean, the system is going broke, and Social Security
exactly.
is based on what you're putting in now.
But it's a pay-as-you-go system, you see, Social Security,
yeah,
and there are no assets behind it. So the further we go ahead in debt, you know, the deficits keep building up until we go like Greece. We become a bankrupt country. So we have to turn around. And the only way you can do that is to enable, this is a basic law of economics. Both Marx, he rejected this, and then the primary Keynes rejected it. It's called Say's Law of Markets. And basically it says production has to equal consumption incomes. And consumption, if you don't have that, there's no reason to produce. But today, most of that consumption incomes go to the rich, and they can't spend it. There's no way physically they can spend it. Therefore, we have to democratize ownership opportunities.
Yeah, and that word is quite common within the descendants of American slave and African American community, consumption. We have become the biggest consumers in the world, with America being a $120 trillion business, yet we get $1.2 trillion of it, and we consume all of it. But I'm going to go on to my next question is, with American infrastructure crumbling, urban cities deteriorating, high crime rate, the infant mortality rate among African Americans, and with the incarceration rate, how can we, as descendants of American slaves, build communities, not neighborhoods? I want to put emphasis on that. There's a difference between neighborhoods and communities.
Correct.
How can we build communities? When I say community, I'm talking about business districts and ownership and looking out for the citizens that own the homes and where they can accumulate generational wealth. You know, as you mentioned about the 1%, it makes no sense to me that two people have more wealth than 52 million African Americans here in America.
Right.
That makes no sense to me. But to get back to the question, how can we build generational wealth and literally revolutionize? When I say revolutionize, I'm not talking about, you know, violence and war and overthrowing the government. It is a revolution that has to be taking place. And the revolution that has to be taking place has to be taking place within the economic issues that we are facing by putting into place concepts and ideas and systems. So can you just give us a brief, you know, example? Is that at all possible? I mean, you can go into what you guys came together here in East St. Louis and did. My question, and my main question is, can we still do that? Is it at all possible?
Of course. What we tried to do in East St. Louis and would have achieved it if Yvette Young, the lady who was the representative in the state, had not died. But in any event, we were able to get from the state legislature, we had the governor was ready to back it. We got the House of Representatives to adopt the legislation. I'll describe it to by unanimously. It's incredible. You know, both the Republicans and Democrats supported it, and it went to who should own the land. Should it be owned by a tool called the state or the city, the politicians, or should it be owned by all the citizens? So in East St. Louis, in 15 surrounding communities, we got this legislation through one of the houses unanimously. And we had to build a new city that they were going to call Old Man River City to replace what East St. Louis and these communities. And the idea would be is that the city and the state would transfer the ownership to what was called a citizens' land development co-op. And every child, every woman, every man who had a permanent residence there, or those who would come in as you rebuilt the city and a very advanced design for a new city by Buckminster Fuller, each of them, they would own the land so that any leasing to new companies coming in, the lease incomes would become a source of income to everyone, as well as new jobs. And they had advanced energy systems built right in. NASA had brought their team from the Cleveland area, from Ohio, to come in that would change the brownfields into fields that they would take the brown fields and turn it into methanol and then convert that into advanced power technologies so they can produce water, you can produce heat, and you can produce methanol for feeding in as fuel for the new industries that came in. But in any event, that legislation is available in a city like St. Louis, a city like Dallas, a city like Atlanta, San Francisco. We're working. We were there in Detroit when we met with one of the leaders in the District 3 at Detroit, who was very open to these ideas. They're studying it, but it would make every citizen, if you wanted to build a new Detroit, you could take a portion of the city or you can take the whole city. We were trying to do this, as a matter of fact, Bucky Fuller and Kelso we brought them in back in 1968 after Martin Luther King was assassinated and you had the riots. But we had leaders there, a woman, Ennis Francis, one of the great, great leaders that I met in my life, an ex-Garvey supporter. But when she heard these ideas, that became, she even testified for the employee stock ownership plans before the Congress. And unfortunately, she died in 1980. And she ran for vice president of the United States in the New Hampshire primaries. She was tremendous. Yeah. But in any event,
yeah,
leaders are what's needed. This is what DASI has to do, is find those leaders.
Yeah.
And then they can change it. You change the tax system. For example, you pay no taxes under the tax system we would have. Is not what Marx suggested with the graduated and progressive income tax. It'd be a flat tax. It would eliminate any tax. Let's say we were figuring out a family of four would not pay a penny so that they can meet their own needs until they had $100,000. And then every dollar would be at the same rate as Bill Gates would have on his dollars, his profit dollars. You see, in that way you can eliminate deficits. You can still meet the needs of welfare. You can still keep your promises under Social Security, but there will be a source of keeping those promises until gradually, as people were able to get their own independent incomes, they wouldn't need Social Security. They'd get more than Social Security or welfare.
Exactly.
All right.
I'm going to move on to my last question. We got about 10 minutes before we close out. And, you know, most citizens of America and descendants of slaves are not aware and don't know that in America there is what you call a constitutional government and a shadow government, or lack of a better word, a monetary system. My question is, doing something on the monetary side, we as Dotsie and people, and you were talking earlier, got into it about earlier, and what that monetary system is called and that shadow government is called is the Federal Reserve Bank. Many people, I was telling a young guy yesterday that he said, I thought the Federal Reserve Bank was owned by the government. Well, no. But explain to us the Federal Reserve's purpose. And why the Federal Reserve, and why would they and should take a look at not capital ownership? What benefits to the Federal Reserve Bank? Because America has a $20 trillion deficit.
Right.
And with the $20 million. Go ahead.
Okay. Where you're going to find, you don't even have to change the law. Okay, if you go to Section 13, Paragraph 2 of the Federal Reserve Act, it says that the Federal Reserve Bank, and they're talking about, let's say, the Chicago Fed or the St. Louis Fed, any Federal Reserve Bank may discount bills of exchange. Well, what a bill of exchange is when you go into the bank and you're going to ask for a loan, and you're going to say, here's what I want to buy and here's why it's going to pay for itself. In other words, you got to have that, and you have to have insurance. You have to have capital credit insurance, because you don't have what they demand is collateral. But anyway, they can discount bills of exchange. This is can be interest-free credit through the member banks, that is your local banks, your commercial banks. And it's for issued or drawn for agricultural, industrial, or commercial purposes. You see? So the power is there. They're not using it. You see, that's
when
the problem.
They're not using it.
They're not using
the
power that they have. And so
okay.
You begin, if you get 1 million people into Washington, first starting at the Lincoln Memorial, but right next door is the Federal Reserve, right across the street. You'll see how quickly it changes, and you'll see how the White House, they're going to have to do something. And the same thing to Congress. See, you want to go beyond all the other parties. Even you might form what we suggest is a Unite America Party, only for the purpose of providing universal rights and treat government for what it is. It is not people. It's a tool. And it's the only one that's a legitimate monopoly. All other monopolies you should be against. And the one thing, if you read the preamble of the Constitution, it says, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, the next two words tell you what it's supposed to be doing. Establish justice. Okay.
Sure.
So if you understand what social justice is, and you understand the principles of economic justice, and I say they were basically Kelso and Mortimer Adler in their first book, which is available free on our website. Their two books and our books are all there, available free, downloading. So you get it right.
Yeah.
And all we should do is encourage people, just look at the home page to get the picture. Right? And so if they spend 10 minutes or 5 minutes on the home page, they will get the picture. And then it tells them how they can, where they should go for learning more and more and more. But in any event, I think the important thing if DASI makes this their tool, that is that website, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but I don't know any other one that is going to be talking about the Just Third Way.
Yeah, it's very powerful. You can listen to it. It's some very informative information on there. But Dr. Carolyn, I want to thank you for. Michonne come back in, but just short. When you say that they're not utilizing the powers that they have to change the lending and credit practices, can you just very short, because we're running out of time. Why aren't they using the power? Is it because the people power are not putting pressure on them? Because when the chairman
you're letting Wall Street control the economy.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve people, if you don't know, they control whether there is inflation or deflation.
That's right.
Are you saying that if the people power, because when the Fed comes, everybody listens in Washington. Nobody steps on the Fed chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank. Everybody listens.
Right. So, and yet it doesn't, as I say, it has a power. The people can demand that they use the power, and the people can say, under the Capital Homestead Act, each of the regional feds would be owned by the people in the region. You see, so you don't have to worry about Wall Street. Let them continue to gamble. Okay? You don't need them. You issue new shares. You set up a system where companies want to issue new shares because they won't have to pay any corporate taxes if they do it the right way.
So, Dr. Carolyn. Dr. Carolyn, I want to thank Gene for putting those five questions or questions together, and I want to thank you for giving us we recorded this. We wanted you on here for reasons. We wanted to be able to go back and listen and get a very understanding of what you were saying. I'm going to ask you a specific question because it's very important to me, because very specific question concerning something that I think you and I have said before, and I want to hear how you articulate it now that I'm going to ask you in a very clear, open form. I need for you to explain to people, those who are listening, the demographics of people who was not incorporated in the original corporation of this country, okay, why it is so important that we understand the laws concerning money, the definition of money, and why is it important that we culturally need to infuse a new system that includes us being involved with justice, because we didn't get justice in the beginning.
That's right.
I want you to explain to me, because it's very important, okay, that people understand that you're here to try to help us to understand that you're trying to get us to give leadership to a system to replace the system that never included us, okay?
Right.
But we now infuse a system that we're giving leadership to that can be justice, not just for us, but for all Americans. Will you please explain that? Put it in a way if you are talking to children who don't understand all the language that you understand. Put it to them and explain it to them why you're saying this is our time to take the system back and infuse us into the system, and we're the leaders.
Look, children understand ownership. All you have to do is see two kids together, and one kid takes a toy, and the other says, what does he say? It's mine.
That's mine.
That's what ownership is all about. You have to own, and you want to be an owner. You don't want to take it away from anyone else. You don't want to steal it, but you want to make it possible that both kids can have the tools or the toys that they want or whatever it is, and as they go through life, have the income so that they can go to their own university. You want to have a future so that professors at the finest universities will teach for a dollar a year. The only way they can do that is to have an independent source of income. Teachers, they need to become owners. They're asking for pensions, but the taxpayers can't pay for it. The same thing goes now. You could see in Ohio, the unions are getting together because the companies that they work for aren't providing pensions. You don't need the pensions are going to go into prices. It just means that we're less competitive in the world market if we continue to increase costs. So the ideas are not that difficult. People understand ownership. They'd rather own than be owned, and that's why that slogan is precisely the message, simple way for Dasi to teach the world and get many Dasi people to begin being the professors and the teachers. All they have to do is examine these things and make the ideas theirs. Now, I studied law and economics at one of the finest law schools, okay? They teach you the law, but they don't teach justice in the law schools. Just think about that. These are the guys who write the laws. And they don't. If you don't understand justice, then you can't bring justice to the world. And therefore, Dasi should be the carriers of justice, economic justice, social justice. They're not negative terms. They are. Most people don't even understand the definition. Somebody told me yesterday, never use social justice. And I said, you don't understand. The Catholic writings on social justice tell you that what you do when you see a way to change a system is to organize peacefully. Dr. King, they call it personalism. You see, not individualism, personalism, because then every person is important, even those you don't see. And this is what Dasi has to do because nobody else is doing it. Not me, not the Center for Economic and Social Justice. What's needed is the people power, fired up people power. So that all I can do is bring ideas that came to my attention. As I say, they're not all mine. I've added a few wrinkles. But the important thing is I have yet to find anybody tell me what's wrong with it. And that's the way Dasi has to approach it. And if they can't answer it, then we get together and figure out an answer that you may not have been able to provide.
So I believe that Gene is committed to meeting with you and surrounding ourselves with a Dasi team of individuals to actually engage and learn more about how we can apply these tools and his education and his knowledge that we can be the leaders of making that happen.
Exactly.
I think it's very important that we have to speak. This was one of the things that we was very clear about. We understand our people, and one of the things I love about Queen, she understand the devastation that we have gone through by the brainwashing, by the European culture, by infusing their ideology on us. This way, to me, this allows us to grab something that not even the European culture is willing to adopt, but we can collectively, by our numbers and by our will, we can make them, like playing a game of bidwill, we can make them have to embrace this by how we create it and make it work for ourselves. Am I on point with this, what I'm saying? It's how we use this information to make it work that we can actually change the current system by how we utilize it for ourselves. Am I right, Dr. Curley?
That's right. Yeah, you said everything now. But it's not just the Europeans. You see, America had some good values in the beginning. It was revolutionary in many respects. They understood that if you didn't own, you're going to be powerless. They wouldn't even give the vote to people who didn't have property. They understood that. You see, and I've been talking to people in Africa, in Nigeria, for example, which is the largest country in Africa. And this guy called, and I said, what you need is to do this. And but then it's so divided there that there are radicals who are killing Christians, you know, because they're Christian or Catholic, you know. And that's I said, form a Unite Nigeria movement, you see. They're killing people who are associated with him. They're going into villages, killing people, and it's on a religious basis. That's not right, you know. And I don't blame Islam. I blame Islam radicals who hate the European models. You see?
Right. Yeah.
And they strap bombs around themselves. Well, how can they kill innocent people?
As we're closing out, I want to see if a couple of other people who's listening to the show and everything, Queen, Leonard, do y'all want to chime in there and make any questions or what you received from this? You want to make any comments? Queen? Leonard?
I'm sorry. I had my phone on mute. Yes, I would like to just thank Dr. Curlin for, excuse me, taking our time out of his schedule to join us and inform us on so much material. And I would like to invoke, if I may, that at some point in time that we will have Dr. Curlin back, because what I want to make clear is that as he has as stated that he really wants Dasi to take this information and run with it, I want you to know that Dasi is an entity that is willing to take the CEJ's model and actually bring it into fruition. And there are just so many things and so many loopholes that we may not be aware of. So we would like to bring you aboard as an advisor. At least that's my vote.
As an advisor to
Dasi, because I think what would be a great honor to you, Dr. Curlin, and, of course, on behalf of Dasi, I would say that we would honor you by allowing this lifetime of work and the dedication that you've put into this. I would like for you in your lifetime to see actually all that you've taught and all that you've done be brought into fruition. I think that would be a gift to you, and that certainly would be a gift to us. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Queen. I believe me, this is one of the most important hour that I've spent in my life. I'm really looking forward to Dasi taking this as not Norman Curlin's ideas, but Dasi's ideas.
I am thanking God for the people that has come on board that is starting to understand this. And I think Leonard, you want to speak to this, because you know Leonard and I have always saw and knew that it was something unique about what you were saying. But you know, timing is everything. You know, we understood that our demographics of people are like children. They can't handle, you know, the meat and potatoes sometimes. You got to give it to them at certain times. But so you need certain people to bring it that can articulate it and bring it to them in the manner that needs to come. And I just want to thank you. And I think we got a guest or someone who actually wants to make a comment. Is this William?
Is this Russell William?
This is
I'm calling from South Carolina.
Who is this?
My name is Equi Neath.
Oh, okay. Have you been listening to the broadcast?
No, sir. I called in earlier, but I think when the guy was speaking, but I guess I was just drawn here from the title of the show, definitely to engage.
Okay. Well, we had a special guest on speaking about the reason why the descendants of American slaves is so important to give new leadership about a new movement about economics, and Dr. Carolyn spoke on that. But you can go back and listen to the show. I'm going to put you back on mute here.
One other suggestion that I think would be valuable?
Go ahead.
Brian Stevenson heads up the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery. He should be approached by Dossi to become one of the. He has to hear of this. He's brilliant. He's a lawyer. He deals with trying to straighten out the criminalization process. So I think you ought to approach him. He's very articulate. He teaches law in one of the top law schools in New York City. He goes from Montgomery there. But I really think he's on the TED show. You can listen to him talk on the TED show. He is the kind of person who could become a president of the United States. He should become. He's the kind of person.
Hey, Gene Gordon, you make that part of your stride, because Dr. Curler mentioned that to me before. I don't know if you know that gentleman. I've actually researched and listened to him. Make sure you talk to Dr. Curler about that information and let him send you some information on him. That can be something that part of your team you seek after to get him to take a look at what we're doing there, Gene. What you think?
Yes, sir. I definitely got his name written down. We'll follow up on it. I just want to say to Dr. Curlin and the listening audience and what Dr. Curlin said earlier, that it's going to take leaders.
Right.
It's going to take leaders with the dream and with the mission to make all this possible. You know, IBMs became IBMs because they got into a point where we've gotten to. General Motors became General Motors because they gotten to a point where we've gotten to, and then don't make the fatal mistake of thinking we've arrived. Dottie, I have no doubt about it. Dottie is going to be fantastic. We're going to do some great things here in America, but we'll never
yes.
get to the point where we have arrived. So we're
yes.
going to need leaders.
Right.
We're going to need leaders. So I say this to the listening audience, wherever your skills, your talents, come on and get on the ground floor with Dotsy, and let's go out there and make some things happen. And Dr. Curlin, we've got to have you back, and we can go more into the complexity of, you know, and understanding, because Dotsy's motto is to unlearn to relearn. And that's what we're doing. We've got to be relearned. We know nothing about GDP, the gross domestic product, and that the engine that moves America. We have to know about these things, get educated about these things, because we missed the memo. As descendants of American slaves, as you just said, and something that really, really stuck out to me, that you went to the finest law school, and they did not teach you, or they didn't teach on justice. Well, how can you have a law that is not based on justice? That just don't make sense to me. And even in accounting schools, accountants, they're not even taught on how the money system and how money works in America. They're not taught that. So I just wanted to throw that out there, you know, to the listening audience. Come on and be a part and get on the ground floor of one of the greatest things that would ever happen in American business today.
Hey, Leonard, and that's your chime. There you go. You get to talk about what's coming.
And I'll tell you another person you want to go after is the senator from South Carolina, Tim Scott, because he's the only senator I've ever heard of who not only comes from a very poor background, but he is a member of both the Senate Banking Committee and the Senate Tax Committee, or they call it the Finance Committee.
Did you get
so
his name
he
there,
is, I think he would be a good person for DASI, and invite him to become a member of DASI.
Gene, did you get that name?
Tim Scott, you saying Tim Scott?
Yes.
Okay, got
he came from a very poor background, and he just terrific.
Hey, Leonard,
very
go ahead
articulate.
And close. Hey, Dr. Curler, I want to thank you. I want to appreciate you. It's been a long time coming, Dr. Curler. I want to thank you for being patient. I know you and I had some knockdown throwouts and heartfelt discussions and everything, but that's what fathers and sons do, right? That's what we do, right?
We're both military guys, right?
Military guys, you're right, exactly.
We have to understand strategy.
We have to understand strategy. That's right. I appreciate you being patient with me and hanging in there. And I think it's going to pay off. I'm claiming it. It's going to pay off. Leonard, go ahead and close us out and tell people what's coming. Very precise, not too much, because I want to be what Queen said. We don't want to expose ourselves like we're ready. We ain't that ready, but we do want to let people know what's coming. Okay, go ahead, Leonard.
Okay, this show was about our economic strategy. Part of it, like I said, is first I want to say, Dr. Curlin, I just want you to know we didn't forget about you. That's why you're here. You know, we always had you. I always had you in the back of my mind. We got the right person in place to be able to push forward your ideologies. Something is going to benefit our community. Just like I was talking the other day, is what we lack in a community is capital. We have lots of people with dreams as far as, you know, business ownership and entrepreneurship, but not the capital to make those dreams and visions come to fruition. This is a way to make that happen, to where when people are talking about, hey, you know, unemployment rates and all this, say, wait a minute, I want to start a barbershop, I want to start a bakery, I want to start a daycare, I want to start this. Now you have the money to do so if we go ahead and implement these strategies.
Exactly.
This is good for our community. So this is one of the things that DASI is working on. We're also working on some other things within our business structure. What we want to do is we want to employ our people, to employ people, period, Americans, all right? But we want to employ our people because we're suffering, all right, and we're hurting. This is part of changing our community and changing our environment around in our culture, in our community, economics. We also want to change our political. We also want to change our political attitudes. As Queen was talking, I don't know if she mentioned this or not, but we mentioned it within our meeting. We want to go forward and create a voting block, all right?
Uh-huh.
Come up with an entirely new strategy. The places we live, you know, 30, 40, 50%. You got some places like Jackson, Mississippi, where we like 71%, all right, you know, population. But those places where we're not above 50%, there is a way for us to get the things that we need politically, all right? You build an economy and you protect it with politics and policy, all right? We have to get policy-minded instead of executive-minded. The mayors and governors and presidents, that's all good, but those senators, city councilmen, aldermen, these type judges, these type of people that create policy are what we need to kind of focus on and get ourselves educated. And that's some of the things that we're going forward into the future as far as educating communities about the political process. So that's one of the things we're doing.
Speak to the legislation of removing color,
yes,
please.
Yes. I understand. We also have on the books, we've got legislation in place removing color from all government documents. Why is that important? I had somebody, I was arguing, I guess, debating with somebody, I wasn't really arguing, but I posed the question, I said, if I was born in the United States and I'm a United States citizen, being born in the United States automatically qualifies me as a United States citizen, all right,
mm-hmm.
protected under the U.S. Constitution, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Why does my government need to subcategorize me after that? If I am a U.S. citizen protected by the U.S. Constitution, that's where my power and sovereignty lies, right there. I don't need no subcategorization by any forms of government. So that's what we want to try to do. That's why we want to remove color. It simplifies the process, and it speaks to racial inequality. If we're all looked upon as U.S. citizens protected by the Constitution, all right, and we all have constitutional rights. You got civil rights, constitutional rights. We're working on human rights, okay? These sorts of things. Now everybody is the same. Now we're talking about something where everyone draw upon commonality. I am a United States citizen, okay? I am protected by the U.S. Constitution. End of story. So that's what this legislation is trying to do, is we're trying to work on getting first Kentucky and then the whole nation on board with this ideology. Right now, you can't go and fill out a job application. They ask you what race you are, how old you are. These are things that the private sector can't do. All right, there's only certain information you can give because they want everybody. What are your qualifications? How much experience have you had? Okay, so it should be the same thing within the government. I don't need to be, you know, we don't need to be subcategorized. All right, if we're U.S. citizens. So we've got that going on. Like I said, we want to build membership. We want to build membership, and we want people to understand our language and why it is important that we are descendants of American slaves, okay? Why that's important through education process. And like I said, you know, if you're interested, we got a member. We already have some membership come up, okay? We've got a website. We're not so much a website, but we've got a Facebook page. Our Facebook page is The DOS Network, all right, on Facebook, or you can join Descendants of American Slaves Advocacy, all right? That's one. I think if anybody's online.
And we have a new group called Uniquely American.
Uniquely American, yes, yes, that's another.
Yes, and that's not a page. That's a Facebook working group.
A working group, yes. Uniquely American. Uniquely American is one of the things that we are also promoting because within DOSI, our story is, as it relates to America, is unique. We are not like anybody else in America, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our story is unique. And it needs to be told, and it not only needs to be told, we need to embrace this story, okay? The story of slavery, the story of where our ancestors, you know, our main motto is remembering those America has forgotten, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you know, first place we need to start when we talk about remembering our ancestors is with us. We have to remember our ancestors before we demand America remember them. So Uniquely American speaks to that, okay? It speaks to that relationship we have that's unlike anybody else's relationship in the United States of America. So these are the things that, you know, we got on the horizon. We got a lot more. Like I said, we're growing. We've got some new people that are just godsend. This is a good thing, okay? This is a great thing. So everybody, you know, just look forward to seeing some new, seeing some progress, okay? One of the things we believe in is we either win or we either learn lessons. There is no failure.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we close it out.
All right, Dan. Well, I want to thank each and every one of you all for being on the show. I want to thank Dr. Carolyn for being here. We are definitely within time. I intentionally made sure that we had a little extra more time so we can have this discussion and this dialogue. And I'm going to just ask the lady of the house, okay, the nurturing of the house, okay, to give her last the word, the closing words of this. You know, I appreciate you so much, Queen. Okay, it's so important to have your voice to be heard about the encouraging the men, the mothers, and the coming on board. So close us out and this last little bit, but everybody can hear you're telling them and explaining to them the importance of bringing the men to this movement and the women supporting them.
Yes. Well, one of the aims and goals of DOTSI is also restructuring what I call the God-given order, with our men being first and our women being not second, but our women being the help meet or the support mechanism, and that we are building families and bringing families together, sons and daughters and fathers and mothers, so that we can turn around the atrocity in our communities, where it's now at 79% of all descendants of American slave homes are being headed by women. We're going to turn that around. So I just want to say to the men of DOTSI, which is everybody that's on this line, is that I want you to encourage and inspire other men, not only to join DOTSI, but to take a personal position in their lives to be that man, that head, and not to dominate or control, but inspire and restore women back to our respective places. I think that's a God-given order. I think that is something that is very important. I think our men have been disenfranchised in more ways than I can describe, and it is time for DOTSI to get on the front line, not only in business, but also in family and daily life. And thank you again.
All right, then. Well, that is a wrap. I hope this is going to be a show that we're going to send out as an educational, informal information. And Dr. Curlin, we're going to include you on part of our advisory board moving forward, because I'm going to say, you're going to hear me say it. You know, I never heard me say this before, but we're going to take over that Center of Economic Social Justice. We're going to make it out. Okay?
That's wonderful.
It's going to be ours, okay? And you're going to be proud about it. And you're going to be proud about it. Am I right, Gene?
I like it.
Yes, sir.
Y'all right then. Well, y'all have a good one now. I love y'all. And that's a wrap. Y'all have a good one now. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now.